Did everybody hear him say that?
The fire department's taking a year off.
Right. He just said we'll take it. The police department gets everything.
You can have the funding, but you...
Record?
Yeah.
You can have the funding, but you also have the responsibility.
Of putting out fires?
Yes.
Well, I don't know how it works.
Like in the nation now, we like to let them burn, so that can be a good thing.
Figurative fires, not literal.
Yeah, and you can have fires every day.
He makes it look easy. Okay, we'll call to order the Stevensville Town Council's budget workshop. Today is June 18th, 2020. Let the record show, council members Michelson, Devlin, and Holcomb are present. Council member Holcomb is absent, or excuse me, council member Dick is absent tonight. Did I catch that all right? Okay. Long day, yeah. You can just come and go as you please, Robin.
Okay.
Because we don't know if you're here or not. Ms. Holcomb is here, as well as department heads for tonight's budget workshop. Tonight we're scheduled to discuss public safety departments, police and fire, as well as the city attorney's budget and the city court's budget. Mr. Michelson, do you have some questions to start off with?
What's that?
Do you have some questions to start off with?
I do.
Okay.
And one of the questions, I just want to get a little clarification from the meeting 2 nights ago when we went over the public works.
Okay.
Last night after the public hearing, George cornered me. He was a little upset. And maybe he got something wrong, but I told him I would try to clarify it. He gave me this worksheet, his budget that he gave to you.
Correct.
And he said he put in $1,800 for overtime, and he wants to know why that isn't in here. And if
we can look at, I wasn't aware of the concerns he had. We did go through his budget and his list.
If it's out, then he didn't have to put back in.
What we often do is we allocate overtime in their salaries and wages line, and we track overtime within the payroll system rather than directly in the budget.
I don't know how it works. I'm just saying what he told me last night. I don't remember. Pass it on.
Sure. I'm happy to address that with him directly.
Mm-hmm. The administration hasn't heard anything of that.
Yeah. What it looks like is that his overtime for that department is included in his salaries and wages line, rather than as its own line item in the budget.
Okay.
That's typically how we budget for overtime. We tried budgeting for overtime separately to demonstrate what overtime costs were, but when it came to actually implementing the coding when we run payroll, we weren't implementing that procedure where we switch overtime over to a different line.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were seeing that we were running over in wages and salaries and not utilizing the overtime line at all. It's a coding issue. So to resolve that, we include overtime to some degree in the wages and salaries line. We can track overtime then through the number of hours we're paying out.
Okay. Also, I received this, the percentages on your, you know, coming out of each department from the pay.
Yes.
And I hope this is a typo. It's got Robert Underwood, finance officer, 26-25 proposal. And you also got him to be airport manager for $250 a month. That can't be.
I don't get it. No.
So
you can't collect two wages. I called the state today.
I'm not. Actually, Katie got that this month. And by the time I go next month, I'm out.
He's in there as a placeholder.
Yeah.
And that should have to come before the council too. To appoint him as airport manager.
He's serving on an interim basis until we figure out what we're going to do through the budget process as far as if that's going to be a volunteer position or a staff position.
Well, I think it was last year, too. Last year on the budget proposal that was passed last year, you had Mr. Underwood on the bottom for $200 a month.
No, that should have been...
His name is in there as a placeholder because he's the current person in that position.
Katie Komarasad did it for 3.5 months, and then before that it was, I can't remember who it is, that name. Broke it up between the guys up there.
Okay.
Not me.
That's where I got confused too, because I've seen how it's.
I was typed it every day, and I've been typing all day, so I probably just missed it.
The marathon meetings we're starting. We noticed today we're starting to feel the effects of Okay, any further questions on the previous content that we've reviewed in previous workshops? Okay, as a reminder, although we kind of set a goal of adopting the budget before July 1st, we've set that adoption for July 9th, which is shortly thereafter the 1st. So we feel that's a reasonable goal. Mr. Michelson.
Brandon, I've been making some phone calls to different municipalities, and everyone's in agreement that, as you all know, because of the COVID and everything else, there's probably going to be shortfalls, not now, but down the road. And my question is, why are we rushing this so fast? Last year we had 12 meetings, you guys did. The year before there was like 13 meetings, a budget meetings and 18. And now we want to wrap it up in 2 weeks.
Well, we're doing it in more than 2 weeks. Well, if you look at the calendar, we started workshops on June 9th, and we will adopt a budget on July 9th. We started budget meetings on June 9th with the council, and we will adopt a budget, or we're planning to adopt a budget, on July 9th. So
that's 4 weeks.
That's 1 month turnaround, which is these workshops were exactly what we did the year before last. We did the same number of workshops. We've spent the same number of time, same amount of time on the workshops. I guess there are a number of reasons we're pushing a budget sooner rather than later. One, we don't want to end up wasting half of the fiscal year like we did last year on not getting anything accomplished because we didn't have a budget. Secondly, the clock ticks in July for me, because I leave for paternity leave at the end of July, and I'm homebound at that point. I'm still able to carry out my duties remotely, but when it comes to budget adoption, that's something I feel very strongly that I need to be present for. And so that last week of July is really as late as it can get for us, because after that I'm stuck at home in quarantine, and that's not something any of us have any control over.
I get that.
So it's not uncommon for municipalities. I'm not sure which exactly ones you spoke to, but one example is Bozeman, although they're quite a bit larger than we are. They adopt their budget by July 1st. They do an extremely conservative estimate on revenues, which we're doing, so that when revenue projections come in August from state taxes, if there is leftover revenue, then we can come back to council for authorization to spend that. So we're taking an extremely conservative approach to this budget, where I think even if you didn't adopt the budget in July and you instead waited until September, we would still, I think, adopt a very similar budget. We are taking into account the effects of COVID-19. And I guess my feeling is that through these workshops, this is our third evening together in discussing the budget, and through these workshops, the level of feedback that I've received hasn't caused me alarm that July 9th is a date that's too ambitious. It appears that largely the council supports the initiatives that have been brought forward in the budget, in the departments that we've discussed.
Correct. I don't have the issue with that. My issue is with the taxable value that's going to come in August.
Sure.
And of course, the gas tax won't be. I did call Hamilton. I called Manhattan. I called Haver. I called up at Ronan, and I called Chinook, and all of them, just different figures here, but all of them are waiting. And the guy in Haver told me that the bigger cities, like you said, they have so much more flexibility with their revenue that they can plan ahead, where the little towns, they have to keep it right to the letter.
Mm-hmm.
So I just say, I just don't want to rush this.
No, and
there's some things, we're kind of going through stuff, and that's on us too, but as we backtrack and go through it and finalize things, there's going to be a lot of questions that come up. So.
Okay, and we'd like to hear those questions. That's what the workshops are for, is to discuss the questions, discuss the issues. I don't want to see us come to a preliminary budget hearing and have a whole slew of objections that could have been addressed from council in a workshop. So, you know, I guess while I understand your concerns not to rush, I would urge you and the rest of the council not to wait to the last minute to bring your concerns forward if there are concerns in the budget. For example, if you had a concern over the community development director position that we're putting forward, if there's a concern with that, which wasn't expressed at the last meeting, we'd want to address that in the numbers now rather than putting a preliminary budget document together and then having wasted all that work when it's not going to fly. So that's what these workshops are for. If there's an initiative you hear tonight that you don't support, we'd like to hear that now so we can address it and work it into the budget rather than waiting till the last minute and having to go back and redo the work we did to get the budget document ready.
So when are we going to address the wages and everybody? Yeah, coming up in a meeting?
Well, we did that on June 9th at length.
We didn't make a vote to pass the wages.
No, you wouldn't do that until the end of the until the end of the you use that you adopt the wages when you adopt the entire budget. That's standard practice. But we discussed wages.
Yes, we didn't vote and make finalization on it.
Ms. Devlin?
So is what you're saying is as we have questions like with wages, that night would have been an appropriate time or any time thereafter to discuss our concerns, bring our questions forward, have a resolution with those before they get put on the final budget for us to vote on and adopt. Is
correct? Because those have a dramatic effect on the bottom line of the entire budget. So we want to hear that early because that completely changes. I mean, when you're talking nearly $1 million in wages organization-wide, you know, a percent here or a percent there, or one example is if you change one person's wage $1 an hour, that's $2,080 just in wages, never mind the contributions associated with that.
So maybe we should have a moment of any questions that we have before we move forward. It is their night, but it sounds like there was some confusion in that.
Sure. Yeah, no, and you know, just like we did last time, I'm happy to entertain any questions on any of the material we've covered up until this point before we dive into new material.
Okay. Well, for starters, Robert's wage from 21.46 to 26.29 is way off. I can't support that.
Why?
A $5 an hour raise from 1 year service? No.
I guess, and like we explained when we brought the new wages schedule to you on the 9th, as I explained on the 9th, we were realigning some staff wages to better fit the duties and responsibility that those positions hold. And Robert has a tremendous amount of responsibility in his position. Ms. Holcomb?
I guess I'll be the bad person here. With the COVID and everything going on, I honestly don't think, and I understand we should ask questions when this came, but you know, when you're getting so much thrown at you, and then you go home and then you start bringing it all in. With COVID going on and everybody's laying people off, why are we wanting to make these kind of raises now? I mean, I think we should need to freeze the raises for this year until we know what the financial outlook is going to be through all this, because you know, you keep hearing that we're going to have a second wind of this where we don't know what this is going to do. I mean, I honestly think that we should put freezes on raises for this year and then look at it next year. But I mean, just going through this, I mean, I understand you want to, but I mean, you got George on here not getting a raise at all. You have one person on here only getting 4 cents. I mean, it's just, it doesn't sound right, I mean, to do it this way, in my opinion.
No.
But until we know what the outcome of all this COVID stuff is going to happen, I think, and I'm not saying no one deserves a raise. Trust me, I'm not saying nobody has done anything wrong. I'm not saying that no one deserves a raise. I just think that with this whole COVID and not knowing what's going to be in the future, you know, coming in the pipeline, I just think, right now, I think wages should be frozen.
Ms. Devlin?
So you spoke of us possibly having a surplus of $250,000.
The projected surplus right now is roughly $100,000 in the general fund. We have a reserve now of roughly $250,000. So with this surplus, we anticipate we should see a balance of around $350,000 in rough figures in the general fund.
And that would more than cover raises.
Well, not all wages come out of the general fund, but the revenues produced by other funds and the reserves in the general fund combined would cover the redistribution of wages that we're suggesting.
So we would not be losing any money moving forward.
No, and I guess one to tie into that. Part of the reason you have reserves is to weather you through hard times. Mm-hmm. And if in fact COVID-19 turns into a hard time for the town of Stevensville, we're in a very healthy position to survive it. We've worked really hard over the last 2 years to rebuild the reserves that were spent down in past administrations, and to put us on firm financial footing so that going forward, if something bad happened, we felt comfortable proceeding with services as usual.
Can I say something?
Yeah, Chief Marble, go ahead.
We talked about this before, but I think it's of paramount importance. I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but we've got to look at this position of corporal. In my opinion, it's a must. Without that position, it's not fair to require somebody else to train new officers coming in, and it's impossible for me to do it with the staffing that we have. I can't work on, I think I'm five deep on filling investigations right now. Those take a significant amount of time to work properly. I have a slew of other misdemeanor investigations on top of everything else, trying to get projects going and things like that. There's no way to effectively train a police officer and be the police chief at the same time. Just real quick around that, and just give me a second. If anything, it's so important right now that we make sure that we're absolutely addressing training appropriately with everything going on in law enforcement. That's of paramount importance. So in my opinion, whatever we're going to do with wages, and I would, if it meant giving up whatever increase I'm looking at, I would gladly give it up to make sure that that corporal position goes through. We have to have that. So I just wanted to put that out there.
And I understand, and if we decide to move forward with raises, I just think it should be fair across the board. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think you should have one person getting $5, one person getting a penny, one person getting 6 cents, one person not even getting anything. I just don't think that's right.
Part of the reason that there is such a disparity from one individual to the other is because when we realign them on the new wages scale, they all end up on different places, and some of them are due to catch up, and some of them are ahead of where they should be if we adopt a fair wages scale. So while I don't disagree, Robin, that they may appear to be unfair right now, going forward, I guess the appearance that they're unfair now is necessary so that going forward everything looks fair, because they'll all be on the proper place of their matrix in their department. There are some wages that, frankly, we're overpaying for right now. And so that's why you'll see some people not see a raise, or some people only see maybe a 4 cent raise or something. And there are some wages that there is a serious disparity between what we're expecting that person to do and what we're actually paying them to do for.
Well, I understand, but not every banker makes the same wage. I mean,
right? No, and that's why not every public works person in our organization doesn't make the same wage either. That's why every finance officer we've ever had has made a different wage.
See, and I'm okay if we did it like we did last year in last year's budget, where everybody just got to, if we're going to give them a raise, that it just be straight across the board. I mean, at least just think about that for this year. I mean, because of the COVID, and I don't have a problem doing the corporal. I mean, because I do understand that with the craziness that's going out there, I mean, the police officers are putting on their uniform and walking out not knowing if they're going to come back home.
Ms. Devlin.
So wages are what I do for a living. That's how I make my living. It's off people's wages. We're actually seeing a huge surplus in positions available right now. Nobody has been laid off in our company, meaning we've got well over 200 employees right now, and they're all working. We have over 50 potential new positions that we can't find people to fill because there's nobody available to work in this area. When I look at the matrix, and I don't mean this any disrespect, but for working for government, for working in Stevensville, these wages are kind of embarrassing because they are low. Your position, moving it up $5, we see those positions come in and they're minimum 30 an hour with full benefits, with the full gamut. So I have appreciation for what you're trying to do. And yes, it seems like a lot of money, but everybody's still underpaid.
Mr. Michelson.
So the two positions that were the community director and the parks director, $77,487 are adding to the budget.
Correct.
And with all these raises added together, we're adding $286,000 to the budget.
That's correct. That sound right to you?
It's on the sheet. It is. What's on the sheet? Is that what you're doing off?
It's on the sheet here.
Yep.
I took the difference and then I added the 77. So we're 286,000. That's
77
that's
should be included
the
in that.
Yeah. Proposed revenue that's coming in.
Don't add the 77 because it's already included in that number.
And the community get
tracked. Yeah, because those positions are on that matrix.
Oh, okay.
So there,
yep.
that 77,000 okay. is included in the number.
Yeah, you're right. I digress. But anyway, to get back to one last thing, it was brought to my attention by Claire in Havard, Craig, I mean, he's the city manager. And he says it's very, you have to be equitable across the board. They had a matrix system in Havard years back, and it got so whacked out of hand that people were quitting and lost it for files, and he said it was a mess. He thought, to be fair, that it should be, like Robin stated, 2 or 3% wages across the board for everybody. And yes, these people might be a little underpaid, but I guarantee you the finance officer in Hamilton doesn't get 26, 29.
Oh, he gets more.
The finance officer? That's not what...
Greg Shepherd gets plenty more than that, I'm sure of it. Mr. Marble.
So just to remind, well, and Robin, you might remember this, and I spoke to this last time we were together. We started out years ago, before I was even here, so 18, 20 years ago, with a step and grade system. And that system was put together by a professor in Bozeman. And it was based on benchmark evaluations, but it's essentially based on the job description. That's where the base started. Somehow we got away from that, and we did what we're discussing now, and there was a distinct disparity. There was a huge problem with, you know, hey, we're just going to splash these numbers out here and not really look at the job that that person's doing. So if we're going to do this right, in my opinion, we've got to do that. And that's part of the other reason why I created that matrix that I showed everybody, well, not Robin, we didn't get a chance to, but that I showed everybody how that's laid out. Because there's certain parameters that you have to meet within particular job descriptions, advances, you know, public works, they need to get their certifications for water and sewer, you know, that type of thing. We have levels of certifications. And you would expect, especially concerning retention, to pay somebody a fair wage for not only advanced levels of certification, but for the duties that they perform. So to use John as an example, to, you know, that's why I really want to get this corporal thing going, is because if you're paying a base wage police officer position, you expect that person to perform the duties of a base wage police officer, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what's fair. You start adding things on top of that, better start paying for it, because that person's not going to stick around. I mean, that's what we've got to look at. So when we break apart the job descriptions and things like that, that's what we're doing. We're looking at them going, okay, we need to really figure out what's fair for that position, what's competitive for that position, what other, and Bob, you alluded to that, but what other departments or other towns our size are paying for that position. And then we also have to look at what is the cost of living in this area that we're in presently. Are we paying a livable wage? All of those things have to be addressed. So I think in fairness, you know, if there's a significant increase in one category or another, I believe that it's based on what is arguably competitive, what is a livable wage in the area, and what that work is truly being done by that person. Is it fair for them to do that? Is it in the job description? Is it fair? So I urge you to really look at those things when we're looking at salaries and wages. Yes, it's the largest portion of the budget. But if we don't start addressing some of these issues, I fear that we're going to have more of a revolving door than we already do. You know, I mean, Robin, I never thought in a million years that I would be the second most senior employee for the town of Stevensville. I didn't think that would happen, you know, but I am. When George leaves and he retires, it's me. And we've gone through so many people, not only in the police department, but in the front office, you know, we just keep going through people. And that does not serve this public well. It just doesn't, you know? I mean, I can tell you from personal experience, when I go out and I deal with something and I have institutional knowledge of everything that has to do with that family and so forth, I can get so much more done. Well, that applies towards these other positions as well. You know, if you're talking about the treasurer's position and you have somebody with some longevity in that position, and they think back, oh yeah, you know, I remember 10 years ago we addressed this issue, and you know, let's look at making these changes based on that person's institutional knowledge of the situation. It just makes sense. So again, I urge you to really look at that when you're considering salaries and wages.
And I'll add that the administration is not opposed to a fair wage increase across the board for all employees. What we're advocating for is that in order to implement those types of increases, that we put everyone in a fair wage in the first place, so that their increase, if it's 2 or 3% a year, as dictated by council, is a fair increase for everyone, and doesn't benefit some employees more than other employees who work equally as hard to accomplish their duties that year. Like I said, you know, a lot of this has to do with aligning people to the work that they're performing to a fair wage. I'd say a good share of the challenges that we internally face as an organization within the administration, and those challenges are a direct result of a lack of longevity in the organization. And that lack of longevity, there are a number of factors that affect that. But one of those primary factors, aside from the environment, is what we pay. And, you know, when we developed the wages matrix, we knew we weren't going to be competitive with a number of other municipalities or other organizations. But we tried to do our best for our region as best we could, understanding that, you know, it's a very dynamic community that doesn't have a lot of resources, and we do expect a lot from our people with very little money.
I have a question for you, James. Mm-hmm. You had just stated about longevity. You're the second longest here. Mm-hmm. You're going from 2940 to 3148. You've got a man above you, just named George Thomas, who almost got 30 years of service. He ain't getting a raise at all.
I got 26, I can get for free. Yeah. So
I'll tell you. I mean, I'm not opposed to George getting a raise.
That's not the issue.
You know, I'm advocating for my department. You know, but yeah, I mean, if George needs to address that issue, by all means, I don't disagree. I mean, I think people need to be paid better than everybody's getting paid here. That's the perfect world. But that's not where we're at. So I don't disagree. I really feel that we have to look at these things and say, okay, what is fair for this position, and base it on all those things, and including longevity.
Right. And longevity is incorporated into both. I mean, if we want to compare public works to the police department, longevity is included in both of those matrices. The other thing to consider, Mr. Michelson, when you compare the public works director to the chief, or public works supervisor to the chief of police, is that they have very different jobs. They both are in jobs of supervision, but they have different jobs. When we realigned those wages and what people were paid, for example, the public works supervisor was one of those cases where for the requirements of that job, we felt that where he ended up on the matrix, and when we applied that individual's skill set and longevity to the matrix, that's where he landed, that conveniently. And so to us, that was a positive thing, because what that told us was that wage, at the very least, was in line with our thinking. When we saw great disparities between, for example, when we see a $5 an hour disparity between what we were paying someone and what we want to pay them, that's alarming, because we were taking advantage of that person. But when we don't see a disparity, that's telling us that we might be actually in line with what that position is supposed to be paying. Do you see the logic in that?
I do, kind of, but
I mean, we're not setting out on this wages matrix to be fair to some employees and not fair to other employees. What we're trying to do is make it fair for everyone in the long run. And this year is a year where everybody's going to see a little bit different wage going into the new year. What we'd still like to do, which hasn't been a topic of much discussion in these workshops, is we would still like to adopt or continue some merit-based system, so that employees are rewarded for going above and beyond in their positions and you know, giving us exemplary work. Much like, if you remember, in previous administrations up until last year, every person saw a different increase. Some people saw 1%, some people saw 2%, and others saw somewhere in between 0 and 2%. And that was based on their performance evaluation in the organization. And then we added to that sometimes a COLA, a cost of living. And so when we were strictly on the merit system, which was in my opinion, a knee-jerk reaction to a longevity system, because it didn't account for longevity whatsoever, we saw things come out of balance, and then we got into this routine of every time someone left, which, as we've noted, there has been a bit of a revolving door to deal with. Every time someone left, we would try to start the next person, regardless of their qualifications or experience or anything. We would start them at the beginning wage of the person before them in that position. And that wasn't fair at all. It was an attempt to be fair. But, you know, when you have an individual come to our organization with multiple certifications in the public works field, but to be fair, you only pay them the starting wage in that position, that is the exact opposite of fair, because that person brings a lot of experience and certification to this organization and training that we can take advantage of. We should compensate them for that. They should feel valued because of that. Mr. Michelson.
One last thing, Brandon. Robin started out with the coronavirus, and got two articles here, but I'll only read one, and it has to do with Butte Silver Bowl, and that came out on June 14th. They are already laid off all their summer hires in half. They're making other cost-saving moves in anticipation of revenue hits because of the COVID-19 restrictions. Budget officials are expecting a significant increase in delinquent property payments because businesses were closed and many people lost their jobs. They say the county could lose $4 million in tax revenue in the coming months. Budget Director Dana Gleason and Executive Director recommend an annual budget stay mostly neutral compared to the fiscal year plan on June 30th, and they're anticipating instead of a 6 to 8 usual delinquency rate in property taxes, they're going to say there's going to be 16 to 18 and even more higher. There's budget shortfalls all across the board in every town, not right now, but it's coming. And I just really think that if we do all these wages as anticipated, we're going to set ourselves up for one huge fall. I have to agree with Robin. I would like to still think we should just hold the fort for one more year, and because it's going to happen. And then what? You're going to have massive layoffs. That's all.
Any further remarks?
Yes, Betsy hasn't been able to make it to any of these. Would it behoove us to kind of debrief and see where he's at before any changes are made?
Yep, and we have an extra day on the calendar, June 30th. That's not necessary. It's scheduled as an alternate day if we need it. But what I'm going to propose, in the interest of time and continuing this conversation, with some further research on our end and you know, to help this process along, on the June 23rd, next Tuesday's budget workshop, we're supposed to discuss revenues and capital expenditures. We will incorporate a wages discussion into that conversation.
Yeah.
We will, in fact, we will bring back everything that we had from the first conversation. And now that you've had a chance to digest that information, we can come back to the table. Okay?
Thank you.
You bet. Okay, with that, we are not following the agenda in terms of which department's going first, but I color-coded them this time again. We're going to start with City Court. Okay. You bet. Judge O'Connor is here for any questions the council has in terms of the City Court budget. City Court's budget largely remains unchanged from previous years. There are some contingencies in there for things like trials and interpreters and that sort of thing. The most significant increase, I guess, to the court's budget would be that of wages as we realign wages for the court clerk with other administrative services across the organization. Judge, anything?
No, I think that accurately states what the court's budget proposal is for this upcoming year. It's largely unchanged from past years. There are things that are in there that the court budgets for and doesn't always use. We always budget for jury trials. We don't always have them in a particular year. We always budget for interpreter services, substitute judge services, those types of things. We don't always use those. So the budget is largely the same as it's been in the past. A couple of additions for equipment that were asked for as far as a locking storage cabinet, I think was really the most expensive item that the court asked for this year. That's different from our previous budget, but if anyone has any questions about it, I'm happy to answer them. Yes, sir.
Your office supplies and materials?
Mm-hmm.
It's unchanged? You just absorb those costs, the rising costs that come with
it? No, that actually, that is, office supplies and materials was increased this year. I want to say $200 or $300 from last year, and that's to, we got through all of the files that we had. The court has to have files for the cases that it has. So we used up all of those and have to order more of those. Other things that have increased are other types of office supplies, more paper, more things like that we've incorporated into this year's budget. But, so there is an increase there, probably about $300, I would think, from last year.
Okay. And training services, that remains unchanged? Or?
As far as I know, the court day, I didn't ask for anything additional with regard to training. Court is, courts of limited jurisdiction judges are required to go to two mandatory trainings during the course of the year. That's required by the Montana Supreme Court for all courts in the state of Montana that are courts of limited jurisdiction. The costs of those trainings are always included in the budget. The clerk is also required to go to training during the course of the year at least once, sometimes twice, depending on the year. So those costs remain roughly the same. If I know the location of both of the conferences during the course of the year, the differences you would see would be the mileage costs, the costs of the per diem for the particular town that it's in. But largely, that's unchanged.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions for the judge? Thanks for being here, Maureen. You're welcome to stay, but I would imagine you may have other things this evening to
attend to. Thank you
very
much. All right. Well, thank you for your time this evening.
Thank you.
The next budget will be QUIC, which includes legal services, both prosecution and civil service. We briefly, or I guess maybe not even briefly, I think we discussed this as, in as much length as necessary in our administrative discussion when we proposed on our first training or on our first evening.
This doesn't show what last year's budget is.
I'll explain that for everyone's benefit again. I gave you enough copies to pass out if you wouldn't mind facilitating that, Vicki. So Vicki's question was why don't last year's figures show up in this year or on these sheets? And if you recall from our first workshop, we discussed that we divided our accounting system out into what we call org codes. And so, for example, if you look at the top of the green sheet I passed out earlier, on the upper left-hand corner, it says 300 City Court. And so what we do is we assign a code that's 300 to all the lines that apply to City Court services so that when we produce this report, it combs through all of our accounting system, the entire accounting system, and pulls just the City Court stuff so that this piece of paper only shows the City Court. So it helps us become more concise on what we're looking at per department. And you'll see that benefit when we get into the police department budget where they're operating out of multiple funds as well as the fire budget. In fact, Public Works, which we reviewed last week in the pink sheet, you could see all the funds together rather than us having to go fund by fund by fund. We can just go in, click a button, and it produces this report. Because we created those organization codes, they're considered new items in the system. So we still have last year's data and every year before that, but it won't print it on this piece of paper because it considers it a new account. So next year you're going to see a column of past data, you know, and it will continue to build. So for a few years, we will have to kind of stumble through, you know, the last year's actual. But part of the reason we're not super upset about not being able to see last year's actuals is because, if you recall, we want to continue this trend of zero-based budgeting and these performance-based measures, where we're looking for, what is the budget producing in terms of work product, and having the department heads, as best they can, start back at a zero level and justify everything they're asking for. So, on the budget report, the white piece of paper I just passed out, you'll see we split out prosecution services from our legal services budget. So there's commonly a a misnomer, if you will, that our entire budget for an attorney is consumed by the civil work that is done for the town council and the mayor's office and the rest of your organization, when the reality is approximately half of that position is consumed in court and defending the town and the citizens in criminal matters. So we created a prosecution services line that's very specific to prosecution, and we're no longer using the 352 object code. Everything's now in its own account, so you can see the differences between the two. We're budgeting $17,000 in each of those accounts for a grand total of $34,000 per year in our legal services budget. Mr. Marble.
We are adding a position which
will increase the likely activity of the attorney and the court.
Yes.
That's accounted for.
It is, okay.
Yeah. You can see last year, you can see the 19 on this sheet, you can see the actuals of what we spent in each of those areas, and that came to 28,000 grand total as of today. So we still have our June bill to pay, but that's going to be pretty close to where we think we'll be.
Okay, so I also recognize with the addition of the position should also affect the revenues. So was that accounted for as well?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. In any, as the theme goes this evening, as you've heard us state, we've done so in a very, very conservative way. Because we anticipate that defendants in court probably, and this has been the case through past recessions anyway, with economic times changing a bit, we don't anticipate that a lot of court defendants would be able to pay their fines in cash, and they may have to work those fines off through volunteerism or community service. So when we estimate court fines and fees, we take that into account. So we're not projecting a significant increase in court fines, just so that we're pleasantly surprised if she collects more in fines than what's actually produced or what we've actually guessed for. Any questions on legal services, Mr. Michelson?
So you're doubling legal services from last year, more than doubling. You budgeted for $15,000 last year based on Brian Williams, of course, when he was here. Of course, it's a different matter. And your budgeting is on the aspect of Mr. Owens being here at every meeting, correct?
We're budgeting on similar activity from the last fiscal year, yes. So we have taken measures to make sure that Mr. Owens can attend meetings telephonically rather than in person to help with the cost of having him present at some meetings. There are some meetings, I think, so we just don't have a choice sometimes. But I think largely we do have a choice to have him available telephonically if needed, rather than having him present for a meeting he may not be needed for.
Okay. So that would cut the revenue down. That would cut this down. If he's doing telephonically, which is a great idea, then there's not mileage, there's not hours.
Correct.
He's only getting charging for the time he's on that phone.
Right, but there is an area, for example, in the court, the judge does not allow under only one other circumstance has she allowed the attorney to appear telephonically in court. Otherwise, he has to be there. So we're paying mileage anyway for him for that case, and that's coming out of the prosecution side.
Correct. I'm talking about coming to council meetings.
And we've accounted for that in this $17,000 for civil services. So in a year's time, we're saying that the administration and the town council combined are using $17,000 worth of legal services. That's what we're projecting. And frankly, there's a bit of fluff in that $17,000 number because we can't predict every last issue that the county or the city attorney is going to have to weigh in on and that sort of thing. We may not spend that entire $17,000, but we do want it available in case we go down a rabbit hole on some issue where his activity is going to increase. So there is some contingency in there similar to the court building in a jury trial.
I'd be willing to go 30,000, but I don't want to go 34. Because if he's not going to be traveling down here at a lot of council meetings, he's only going to be doing telephonically at home during council meetings. I don't think we need to set that budget that high.
And I guess the 34,000, and again, I guess if we're talking council meetings and what he does for the town, not the court, that's a $17,000 budget. And that incorporates him not attending every single council meeting. We've already addressed that issue with the attorney. Is okay, what do you expect your services will cost the town of Stevensville if you appear telephonically to town council meetings as needed, you know, barring any issues or lawsuits, etc. That's the number we came up with. So that is, I mean, with the exception of some contingency funds, that is pretty well as low as we're willing to go, because we just don't know, and we don't want to come short and then have to cut someplace else out of the budget in order to come up with the fees, because that's not something we can really go without.
Well, you did 15 and you put 17,000 into this last budget.
Right.
Okay.
To cover him, to more meetings.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm saying that if it got to that point down the road next year, we could do the same thing again. And
well,
I
I'm not sure. I'm
set it
I'm
high
not.
And then don't get there. But
right.
I'm just saying I think 30,000 is a good round figure instead of 34.
Noted. Ms. Holcomb.
I'm okay with the 34 because if you look at the pattern, it has gone up since 16, 17, and then we're already at 31,000 for 19, 20. So, I mean, it's a pattern that it goes up.
That the 31,000 is our current budget, yeah. not what we spent, just to be clear. What we spent so far is 28,512.
Okay. Well,
I didn't want you to assume that was what we spent, because that's our budget.
Well, it's close.
Yeah. You're right. It's within a couple thousand.
It seems to go up every year anyway. I mean, right. It went from 16,000, now we're all the way up to 28,000.
Yeah. Lawyers aren't getting any cheaper as time goes on. You're correct. Ms. Devlin.
You stated we're adding another position. Therefore, there's going to be a need for more prosecution. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, I'm not in favor of changing this number.
Okay. I think the other thing that we accounted for is that we will see, in fact, we're already seeing it scheduled, we're seeing an increased activity in regards to the truancy lawsuit against the town, and the city attorney is involved in that because he is the town's counsel, and so he coordinates between the attorneys that MMIA has furnished us and between me and those folks. So he is actively involved in that case, and we're seeing activity pick up as we head into arbitration. So. I don't see his hours decreasing by any means. And so when Scott is set with a budget, he does his very best to live within those means. And so, he isn't overly zealous in what he bills us for time. You know, if I have a 3-minute phone call for him, we're not always being billed that 3-minute phone call. You know, he's being reasonable with the resources that the town has. So I think that this is as Ms. Devlin and Ms. Holcomb both stated, this is a reasonable budget and is practical for the town's needs. Further questions on legal services? Okay. We'll save the best for last.
Touch your nose.
Come on, turn.
That was good.
That was pretty clear.
It's blue.
Oh, I am.
It's blue. I'm wondering if it
is. Of course it is.
Wondering if the paper was red next. Thanks.
Okay, law enforcement's budget. This is a two-sided piece of paper, although the second side is just a single line and is covered on the first side, but that's not printed. As we just discussed, organization code in the budget, this covers all law enforcement services budget-wide. So you can see the general funds broken out, the drug fine and forfeitures fund is broken out, the police training and pension fund is broken out. So police services are funded through three different funds in this case. And just as a reminder, like we stated with the public works budget and the other budgets we've covered, this is operations, this is not capital expenditures, okay? So, you know, if you don't see a police car in this budget, that's because we're going to cover that next week. So with this budget, largely, the most significant increase, if you want to call it that, is, of course, equalization of wages. And then we're retaining an FTE in this budget. If you recall last year, you authorized an additional FTE for the police department because of turnover. We never actually got to hire that position. So we're still an officer short of where we should be at this time right now. You know, ideally, when we set out in last year's budget, we would have had, four sworn personnel on the force right now. We only have those three people right now. So that fourth officer, it was retained in this budget with the anticipation of hiring that person in August or September.
And that was approved on last year?
That was on last year's budget, so we're not asking for an additional FTE at this time because we are sensitive to the constraints of the general funds budget. Outside of the wages and salaries, there are some equipment purchases, some replacement of uniforms that are associated with turnover and having another officer. But outside of the wages and that one FTE, the police department's budget largely is unchanged. You'll see most of the spending in the police department, outside of those items I mentioned, going that next week's capital meeting where we discuss another police vehicle. There are some maintenance issues with the current fleet that we may address and that are kind of addressed in this budget that we're prioritizing, but that's why we're pushing for another vehicle, is so that we can continue to rotate out bad cars. So, Mr. Michelson.
So between last year and now, you're asking for two vehicles. One last year was approved.
Bob, can we ask you to speak into the microphone just for this? And you're welcome to move it closer to you, and if you don't want to lean across
one
the table.
One last year was approved, right? And you just ordered it?
Yes.
Okay, now you're asking for another one.
Yeah, and that was the original plan, if you recall.
I wasn't on the council.
And I know we're not talking CIP right now. That will be the next meeting, but just to kind of brush over it, there was $80,000 set aside for vehicle replacement. So, yeah.
So rather than doing one purchase for two cars, we're splitting it into two purchases for two cars. Is what we're proposing. Well, we've already purchased one, and so we're asking to purchase another
in this budget.
In this budget, yeah.
Okay. And I also see you had overtime on here. And that's what I was reiterating earlier. It wasn't on George. So.
Yeah, and that's probably one of those carryovers where we tried to use the overtime line and it didn't work very well for this organization, and so you will likely see that number absorbed into a number above, so that number up above would be $222,000 rather than $221,000.
I want to remind everybody too, and Jamie, I don't know if you know this, but. So the drug fines and forfeitures account, that is a cash count that is, by statute, can only be used for certain expenditures, and that is not something that the rest of the general fund departments can utilize. And it's the same with police training and pension under that category. Pension throws people off. Pension has nothing to do with this account, because we are PERS, just like everybody else, PERS. So this really only has to do essentially with training. And this is the cash count that we get from the state of Montana, just like the fire department, for, and I think it's 35 a year roughly.
Yeah, it increases, and it's based on insurance premiums.
Right, okay. And that is to aid us in, you know, training. It can also be used for equipment relative to substance abuse, things like that. Statutory provisions prevail over those accounts. So again, they cannot be used or factored in necessarily into the general fund to be used by anybody else but law enforcement. Just wanted to throw that out there. And as far as what we've got for operating, is there any specific questions that you all have? Yes, Bob.
Clothing and uniforms, $7,700. Is that a lot?
It's a lot,
for uniforms.
So here's the issue. And again, this can be addressed through longevity, through paying a fair wage and so forth. Every time we have a new officer come in, you know, we're definitely not cookie cut. I mean, there's distinct differences, and clearly. So when we have to get uniforms, when we have to get vests, things like that, they're tailored to the officer. And so every time somebody leaves, we have that cost, and it's significant. You know, the vests themselves are anywhere between $800 and $1,000. And then you have inserts, the plates. John was reminding me of that. I appreciate that. You have a lot of things that go into equipment to keep you safe. I mean, it's kind of, you know, if you equate it to Public Works and some of the equipment they have for safety, I mean, that's what it's all about. The cloth uniforms themselves aren't real cheap, but I was able to get quite a few uniforms for a song. I think it was $64 or something.
Real cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing to remember with those uniforms is that we don't just issue one uniform per officer, because they work 5 days a week, so, or sometimes 4 to 5 days a week, and so they need, well, what do we buy now, 3 uniforms per officer?
Yeah.
So they do some laundry.
They get rank if you wear them too often. So yes, we have the significant expenses that we have to account for. Essentially what we're looking at in anticipation of turnover, because lately that's what we've had every year, we need to have one full replacement for a new officer coming in, and if there's one leaving, essentially another full replacement. Right now, we're looking at adding a position, so there's one full replacement. If we anticipate, and we should, I don't like to say that, but you never know what can happen in somebody's life or could happen to them, and we have to anticipate that we are going to have at least 2 per year. So, very expensive endeavor, hiring police officers. And again, that's why I think, you know, moving forward, we should be focusing on that longevity piece and, you know, keeping them around. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, may I ask, Robert, do you have an idea what the clothing budget was last year?
Yeah, I can tell you right now. We budgeted for last year, that's correct, almost $1,593.
That's what we spent?
That was spent. Okay, that's the actual of what we spent.
We budgeted $5,400.
Yeah, $5,400
was what we spent.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, thank you.
Further questions on the law enforcement budget? Cakewalk. Thanks, Chief.
You sure? Only here one night.
I guess to elaborate a little bit on the police training and pension fund and where that money, why we get that money. As Chief explained, we get that money in part because we are not PERS, or excuse me, we are not police officer retirement system members. So we do not offer that to our officers. They are on the PERS system. So in lieu of that pension that they would ordinarily get, we get police training and pension funds out of insurance premiums. If we went to MPORS, we would not get this money. And so the reason the state gives us is they tell us you can use it for training your police officers, or you can increase their pension with your police for your police officers, either or. This organization has committed to using it for training purposes to alleviate the pressure on the general fund. Mr. Michelson.
Yes. Is there any way to open a discussion now? And I know it was a kind of a sore subject with me 2 years ago when I was on council. There's got to be a way with all this funding that's going to be coming down the pipe that there could be a format or try a safety levy. You and I talked about it.
Yeah, and I don't...
And that would relieve us of our budget so much.
Right. So let me talk a little bit about that. I don't know what is going to be available to us as far as assistance, federal assistance. This town has utilized federal assistance for, I think, two or three cycles. I'd have to look at it. They're four-year cycles, okay? And that's the COPS grant. I can't say what is going to happen with all of that right now, with what's going on in our country. There's talk about taking that money away and directing it towards social services. I'm not going to get into that minutia, okay? Personal opinion, I'm leaving it out. What I had anticipated was to apply for the two additional positions that we had discussed that you all voted to incorporate, right? Those two positions beyond the fourth that was already allotted for and adopted. Yeah. Those two positions I intended to try and fund through federal assistance for a four-year period, simultaneously put forth before the population consideration for a progressive levy that would be less of a fiscal impact or less of an impact on everybody's pocketbook over that four-year period, so that at the end of that four-year period, we would, as the grant develops, so at the outset of the grant, that's where you get your most money, essentially. And it's kind of like weaning you off, so to speak, as you progress through the years with that COPS grant. So on the fourth year, the township would be required to pay, and Robin, you remember that, required to pay full wages, take care of everything. So we essentially would have a four-year period in which to absorb that through public safety levy. That was the plan, and that still is my plan, to really put all of that stuff together. But we've got a wrench thrown in this year with, I don't know what's going to happen. If that federal money is taken away, that discussion is going to be very, very different. And I don't know what that's going to look like. So to answer your question, yes, there is a plan to do that I think is would be less of an impact overall on the citizens that live here. I have to kind of gauge it based on what nationally we're doing. So, yeah, I don't, does that explain your question?
It's something I think we should look forward to, if funding is available out there, or we could even put it to the voters as far as...
Well, we would have to, absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So. Also, where are we at on the SRO?
That's still in development. We're still communicating with the school on what the future of that position is exactly, and they're taking some options back to the school board to bring back to us, essentially. So we're going to continue to communicate on that, and hopefully soon we'll have an update for you.
And how does that work into this current police budget? Have you factored that money that they're giving?
The budget that we've originally proposed to you it does include a $36,000 payment from the school. We may re-massage that a little bit and see. The school has some different funding demands right now, and so competitive or funding for the school resource officer from the school's perspective is extremely competitive. So we don't. The school isn't sure yet what they're going to be able to commit to the position. So we're going to reevaluate the revenue from the school to see if there's a way we can make sure that that position is secure in case the school's funding doesn't come through. So when we discuss revenues next week, that'll be probably a topic of conversation, is whether or not we rely on a payment from the school for that position, and if we shoulder that more.
Because you definitely can't take it out of other departments.
Right. I mean, that's what it comes down to, is if that $36,000 doesn't come through today, we're looking at some cuts in the budget to the tune of $36,000 to make that happen. Or the council can make the conscious decision to use reserves for that year, for whatever, you know, whatever reason you deem necessary. But I guess in this current climate, you know, albeit we supported the administration put forward with council's support up until it came time for the ballot. We did support a public safety levy to support police costs in our budget and to alleviate some funding in the general fund. Tying into our earlier conversation about the uncertainty of what COVID-19 brings to this community, and the idea, you know, Silver Bow's already anticipating experiencing unpaid taxes and delinquencies. I'm not sure now is the best environment to propose raising taxes on our citizens. I think that if we can manage within our means with what we have, and still, you know, do our best to staff a police force with four sworn personnel, and kind of see what the outlook looks like out of this economic issue, then that may be a time that we reinitiate a conversation about raising taxes. But right now, I don't think that the voters are going to get behind increasing their taxes when their pocketbooks are already stretched pretty thin.
Turn in one more thing. So just to kind of continue off of what the mayor is saying as well, it takes us such a significant amount of time to train a new officer. You know, the academy is 13 weeks. Field training is 16 weeks. By the time you have a viable officer that's really kind of has the strings cut so they can just go to work, you're really looking at a year. And I know I've spoke to this before, but we bring another officer on. I mean, we still got our new officer coming back from the academy at the end of this month. We have a new officer coming on, depending on whether or not he's academy trained already, he or she, whoever that may be. We're looking at a significant time frame. There's no way we're really, truly going to be able to address those fifth and sixth positions for more than a year anyway. I mean, that's reality. That is going to give us some time to see how we're sitting. So, in all fairness, I mean, this really is just not going to happen all that quick. You know, the fourth position, yes, we're going to move forward on that. But to get that person trained, to get everything set up, to start talking about, you know, the levies, to consider all of those things, doing the research, you know, coming up with an adequate presentation to the public, having those discussions, it's going to be an extremely lengthy process. And rightfully so. I mean, if people are going to be looking at an increase in property tax, myself included, living in this town, I want to know exactly what that's going to look like for my property, right? So, yeah, I don't want to give you a sense of, it's important that we address the issues and continue to have those conversations, but I also don't want to put you in a position where you have a sense of urgency. It is going to take a long time, and we do owe it to this community to really focus on what the needs are, address their issues, have those conversations, those public conversations, and do this the right way, for sure. Okay.
Anything further on law enforcement? All right. With that, we move on to the fire department.
Thank you. We'll take the scraps.
Sorry.
We're behind you already.
Should I stay here?
No,
All right. You have before you the fire department's budget. Fire department operates in this case out of three funds currently, with the general fund funding the lion's share of the fire department, and then with the ambulance fund also contributing towards emergency medical services. There is a small amount of money, very small amount of money left in the Higher Foundation grant. It was a grant awarded to the town out of the 2017 fire season that was out of a foundation to use for wildland firefighting gear. And so there's just a little bit of money that they're going to spend up in the next fiscal year to close that grant out. Otherwise, the significant increases in fire department spending this year are in maintenance related to testing of apparatus. Every year we're required to annually test certain pieces of apparatus for competency and how they operate. And then in a larger interval, we have some apparatus who have to test every 5 or 10 years on other testing. This year, the ladder truck is up for UL testing. So a group of folks come to Stevensville, they put the ladder through the ringer, make sure that it's safe for our folks to climb on. And that's a significant expense to make sure that A, it's maintained and ready to be tested, and then B, to actually test it. So that's where you're going to see costs most inflated in this budget. In addition, the other requests that came through that were not directly capital related were in relation to fire prevention. The fire department wishes to expand their fire prevention program. The corresponding statistic to that is the better job we do with fire prevention, the fewer home fires we have, and in turn, the lower our fire loss figures are in terms of dollar amounts and what the community loses to fire on an annual basis. That is a statistic that we track. So when we're talking performance-based budgeting, we like to see the performance of the fire prevention program, because that's money better spent on prevention efforts rather than on fuel for engine idling at a fire for 6 hours. So you will see an increase authorized in that budget as well. Chief, anything to add? Oh, we have a question right off the bat.
The SCBA bottles?
Yes.
Seems like every year. I'm saying, are you comfortable with the amount of money that's in for that, or do you need more? Because it seems like the last couple of years you seem to come forward for more bottles.
No, I'm comfortable with where we are now with bottles. With last year, we got all of our brand new SCBA equipment came online last year. So we're set with SCBAs. In the future, yeah, we might pick up another bottle or two, but right now we have adequate bottles. We have adequate resupply. So we're sitting fine on SCBAs and SCBA bottles. You'll see that this year in the budget, there's a little bit of an increase for SCBA testing. That's an annual test that we do every year. We test those bottles and that equipment every year. We did not have to test last budget cycle because they were brand new delivery. So this will be the first testing cycle on that brand new equipment. So therefore, it came forward as an additional expense this year.
And in 4 years, we'll hydro, right?
Yep.
So we hydro test each bottle every 5 years.
Clothing and uniforms, you've only got 1,000?
So if you're looking at clothing and uniform in suppression, there's like $5,000.
$5,000. I've got the wrong one. Okay. Is that enough?
I mean, we can outfit a firefighter for about $3,200.
So you only anticipated on a new firefighter?
We generally always allow for at least one set of turnout gear in the budget. We may or may not expend that. We a number of years ago, we set up and we bought the latest iteration of turnouts of PPE. What we did is we went to more common size rather than a custom sized set of PPE or turnout gear. And then we also, at that time, bought two additional sets, full sets, that we have in our closet in the back room, where if an individual's gear is dirty and needs to be taken out of service to be cleaned, washed, serviced, whatever, we have another set of pants or a jacket that that individual then can utilize until his gear is returned and is back in service. So we do have a couple extra sets of gear always, you know, for use. And we rotate that through so we can kind of help on the wear and tear. We do have individuals that are very active, and we have individuals that are very less active in, within the department. And so the guy that's really active and using up his gear and is hard on his gear, we have so we can rotate out that gear and get into the gear so we get a more even wear across all of our gear throughout the department. And we set that up a couple of years ago so we can have that flexibility to rotate some gear in and out and get better life out of that gear. But again, like James was saying, you know, not every one of us is the same size from year to year, so we kind of fluctuate as to gear as well that way too. But you know, this year we brought on a new a returning firefighter. We had nothing that was going to come close to fitting him because he's a large individual. So we had to buy him a new set of gear, and we did that. So, but yeah, that's plenty of funds to fund what we need to do there. And like the mayor, you know, alluded to, you'll see the biggest increase in the fire budget in the maintenance categories. And again, after this round of maintenance that's in this budget is performed, we will be sitting very well as far as maintenance and upkeep on our fleet, on our engines, and in our apparatus. So we get through this UL test on the ladder. That's going to be good for a number of years. We just did brakes on one apparatus. We have another set of brakes that we're going to be due that's in this budget. We'll get that done. Tires are all brand new on everything we have. So maintenance-wise, we are pretty doggone caught up. We will be, especially after this budget. And then, I mean, going from there, yeah, we will always have some preventive maintenance, but we will be ahead rather than trying to catch up. And I think that'll put the department in a great position as far as budgeting goes in the future, because we are now going to be operating from a proactive rather than a reactive position as far as our maintenance and our apparatus go.
Mr. Michelson.
May I ask, Robert, what was the budget last year that was adopted? What was the amount?
For
the fire department?
So just for the administration, it was 42,500. So it's down this year. For station one, we had last year 919, and asking 600 this year. Facility station two, 603 last year. It's up 1130. Then when we get to the actually suppression, then last year was 26,382, and it's up to 30,637.
Plus, oh, you didn't do EMS. So for out of those accounts, then you're looking at 70,431 is what was budgeted last year. And so you're only seeing a $3,000 increase in this year's budget. Because out of the general fund, which is what Mr. Underwood just reviewed, that last year or this year's budget was 73,162. Last year's was 70,000 and change, 431.
And the majority of that $3,000 is the UL testing on the ladder.
Right. So. What was the ambulance last year?
Last year we budgeted 3566.
3566.
Yeah.
And you want 44 this year?
It's up $1,000.
All right, thank you.
Further questions?
And we'll add those. We get to the capital improvements. You're going to see a couple projects come through on the capital side that were very important that we get taken care of. The bay door expansion is the big deal that we need to get done. But that'll be on the capital improvement side coming up, what, next week?
Yeah, we'll definitely get to talk much bigger dollar amounts during the capital fund portion of the budget. So, yeah, if you... And then, of course, we'll talk wages as well at the beginning of that meeting before we get into the capital stuff. So,
okay. So even though this is $3,000-$4,000 increase over last year's budget, really, your fire department is sitting very well as far as equipment needs and those types of things. And again, once we get through this round of maintenance on our apparatus, we'll be sitting in a very nice proactive maintenance type schedule. Where we should see that maintenance number come down substantially because we now have very nice, new, very adequate equipment. It's all fully stocked, staff functioning. You know, it's good to go. So, we had some very good fortune to get the equipment that we got over the last couple of years to put us in this position. And so now it's just maintaining it versus trying to rebuild it and reestablish it. So, I'm very happy to be in this position to be able to come forward. We just need a little bit more, and then we'll get to a place where we're going to be very proactive on all our maintenance and those types of things. And then as things run through their cycle and cycle out, we'll be in a position where we'll be able to, set aside and look forward down the road that we know that turnout gear is going to need to be replaced, and that's going to be a however many $1,000 hit, and it's X number of years down the road, and VAs and all that stuff, so we'll be in a good position to be able to project and plan for those things coming down the road. So,
if you want to put some of this into perspective, you to think about, and of course, I'm always interested in the fire department and tooting their horn figuratively. I don't get to toot it literally anymore, but there are roughly, while we collaborate with the Rural Fire District, there's roughly 16 fine men and women who serve this community for free. We operate two fire stations and a plethora of equipment, and it comes at an expense of $38 this year for each resident in our community. That doesn't even count the people who use the services in the daytime as they're visiting or traveling through. So if you look at the entire scheme of what this organization completes and what the fire department's able to do with a very limited amount of resources, it's pretty remarkable. On that note, if there's nothing further, we'll adjourn.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.